It's Thanksgiving. Almost. And we weren't supposed to do a podcast today, but then Blake Snell kept me awake late last night. And so this episode with Yahoo Sports' Russ Dorsey will dive in deep to all things Blake Snell and the Los Angeles Dodgers. Is this the best rotation we've ever seen? How good is Blake Snell? Is him going to LA good for baseball? All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbecast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbecast, the only baseball podcast in the world. Impressed that Blake Snell got so paid considering he throws with the wrong arm. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Russell Dorsey. And imagine how good Blake Snell would be if he threw righty.
Is that insert Russ bumps here? Or
yeah, I know you're new here, Russ, filling in for Jordan Schuster, my better half. But this is usually when Jordan would hop in and say something witty or clever or intelligent. Now I'll kick the rock to you.
See, I didn't know that was the setup here.
That's okay. Jordan, who is off this week, he is Thanksgiving bound, and so Russ is here to help me through this episode that I was not expecting to do. Last night, as I sat under the covers, melatonin in my system, my phone buzzed and told me that Blake Snell is signing with the Los Angeles Dodgers, the defending national champions, which is a funny way to think about them, for 5 years and $182 million. The episode that was set to be released for Thanksgiving will now release on Friday. That is our time capsule episode with Foolish Baseball. That will still hit your ears. But with Blake Snell signing with the Dodgers, we had to hop in and do a pod. So let's get the facts out of the way, Russ. Five years, $182 million, with a $52 million signing bonus. John Morosi reporting that there are no opt-outs. Fabian Ardaya of The Athletic reporting that there is some deferred money involved. Jack Harris of the LA Times was the one with the signing bonus information. Let's start big picture. Your initial thoughts about this deal.
Number one, this is a great deal for Blake Snell. One, because I think it puts him in a position to be the ace of a staff or one of the aces of a staff that actually needs him. I think sometimes when we talk about the Los Angeles Dodgers, they're like, oh, the Dodgers don't need Shohei. They don't need Blake Snell. But when you look at the Dodgers starting rotation, they actually did kind of need a guy at the front of that rotation because you still don't know what you have in Tyler Glasnow because you don't know if he's ever going to be healthy. Shohei's coming off of his mysterious elbow surgery where he probably won't pitch more than 120, 130 innings. Gavin Stone, who was actually their best starter all of last year consistently, is going to be out all of 2025 after undergoing shoulder surgery. And then you have year two of Yoshinobu Yamamoto. So you bring in Blake Snell, who is a bona fide ace. And after he came off the IL with the groin injury that he had, he pitched like his Cy Young self. Like, he pitched down the stretch as well as we've seen during those Cy Young seasons. And so you bring Blake Snell in to be the front of that rotation. And I think for Blake, it is, you're feeling really good when you wake up this morning, right? You're feeling like, okay, everything I did in those two Cy Young seasons and last year after I was healthy showed everybody in Major League Baseball that I am one of the best pitchers in all of Major League Baseball. And when I'm on, I might be the most dominant pitcher in all of Major League Baseball. Like, what Blake Snell is able to do as I like to call it a strikeout artist, right, where it's like, I don't care if I walk the yard today, you will get one hit and I will have 14 strikeouts and we will win.
So I kind of want to turn the clock back a little bit and chat about how Blake Snell got to this point, because I think when we talk about fit, it's almost kind of a boring conversation because any team could use a pitcher this good and anybody would want to play for the Dodgers and have $182 million to do so. So this doesn't have to, we don't have to have that specific conversation. But for Snell, I think the trajectory here is really important. So comes up with the Rays, drafted in 2011, debuts in 2016, and in 2018 establishes himself as like volatile, dominant starting pitcher. A lot of walks, a lot of strikeouts, doesn't pitch deep into games, but relatively low ERA. wins a Cy Young, traded to the San Diego Padres, hurt, not himself, 2023. What do you know? Wins another Cy Young. And then he hits the open market as a Cy Young, right? And the expectation is that Blake Snell is going to get a really hefty multi-year deal. That does not happen. His agent, Scott Boras, seems to be holding out for a bigger number. It stretches into March. Snell signs with the Giants on March 19th. 2 years, $62 million with an opt-out after that first year. It's a nice chunk of change. I wouldn't say no to $31 million, but it's not what we were expecting Snell to sign. And it was a bet on himself that he could come out in 2024 and be really good and earn more money. March 19th, Russ, that's the day before the Dodgers and Padres played in Korea. And I think that's really relevant to understanding the arc of his 2024 season because, like, here's an example. We started recording this podcast at 10:40. If I got out of bed at 10:32, the podcast would be worse, right? I've been up since 7:30. I already wrote about Blake Snell. I showered. I have a lot of caffeine in my body. I feel prepared to do my job. Blake Snell was staying ready during his winter. Obviously, he was throwing. But starting your spring training on March 20th, I mean, that has a big impact on how you perform during the season. And we saw that immediately from him.
March 19th is like the week prior to that last final cutdown day where guys are like, all right, I feel in shape to go into the season. And that's him starting cold. Like, it's one thing to throw at your local high school or in your backyard if you're Blake Snell last offseason, like many pitchers do. But every pitcher knows that I need to get to our spring training facility that first week of February, maybe the last week of January, and start getting my body moving. So by the time I get to that second to last week of March, I feel prepared to go out and face big league hitters. And for Blake, all that's pushed back. Let's say his spring was pushed back by, I'll call it 8 weeks, because you don't get a ramp up into the spring like most guys get. Like, you're learning catchers, you're learning a staff, you're learning everything all over, and then you have to get your body prepared to pitch.
Also, nowadays, guys are showing up so much earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, like, all the Yankee starters were in Tampa where their complex is in, like, mid-January, right? That's the expectation now. And I don't want to use it as an excuse for Blake Snell being completely ass for the better part of the first 3 months of the season. But it certainly mattered. Blake said it mattered. People on the Giants said it mattered. And once he got right, we could tell that it was a little bit different. And when I say Blake was bad, like, that's underselling it. He was bouncing on and off the IL over those first 3 months. He had a kid, so he was on the paternity list. Only made 6 starts before July 9th and had a 9-5-1 over those starts. A 9-5-1, Russ.
Woof.
Yikes. But then, after that, he had a 1-3-3 over 74 innings, 13 starts, 105 punchouts, a no-hitter on August 2nd against the Cincinnati Reds, the first complete game of his career, which is hilarious, and on July 27th, a 15-strikeout game in 6 innings. That is the most Blake Snell thing, 15 strikeouts in 6 innings. And so then we reach this offseason. He opts out of that deal. And as a skeptic, my mind is like, this dude won a Cy Young in 2023 and didn't get paid. What is going to be different this time around? How is this dynamic going to change? And yet, here we are on November 27th, talking about 5 years, $182 million. As our producer, Andrew Hart, said, Blake, 182. My question, Mr. Russ, what did change? Why did he get this contract now and not last year?
I think when you look at, one, the teams that were likely interested in Blake Snell this year as opposed to last year, even though you could probably say these same teams would have been interested last year, I think you have teams like, obviously, the Dodgers, right? You talk about, are the Yankees going to sniff around for starting pitching, right? That's another team where I would, in a similar fashion, the Yamamoto signing, right? How does a guy like that get $325 million? Where when all of the biggest markets in all of baseball are involved, that number is going to go way up. And I think for Blake, you feel vindicated that all the work that you did in those two Cy Young seasons and in the second half of last year, people finally saw. It's like going into last offseason, you win. It's Juan Soto winning or going to the World Series, finishing second in MVP voting, betting on yourself the year prior to free agency, where it's like, all right, this is supposed to end with me getting more money than I've ever seen before. And it didn't. And I think for him to come out and have the second half of the season, because I think most of baseball will look at his late signing and say, you know what? That wasn't Blake Snell. That was spring training in the first half. But what we saw, if he was bad in the second half, it would have reflected in the contract that he signed. I think most executives and people around the game looked at that second half and said, okay, even though he has two Cy Young awards and he has a second half where if he did that all season, he probably would be in that conversation for the Cy Young once again. This is truly Blake Snell. This is who he is as a pitcher. And he found the right fit for him. And I know you were talking about fit earlier. Like, I think sometimes it's just like, I just need the right team to offer me the right number, and I'm going to say yes. Like, had he played this out into the winter meetings, could he have gotten more money? Maybe. If this is the number that he said yes to, maybe this would, maybe it could, you could have gotten a couple more teams involved and got that number to 190, maybe even 200. But I think for Blake Snell, where he is in his career, he's established himself as one of the most dominant pitchers in all of Major League Baseball. Like, I think Blake Snell is very happy today, one, because he doesn't have to do the free agency thing again, right? And he just said, I'm getting out of the way. Very similar to Aaron Nola, right? When Aaron Nola could have hit the open market, and it's like, no, I don't want to do any of this. I'm going home.
And now there's a lot of turkey on the Thanksgiving table at the Snell household.
You might buy three turkeys now.
At least. He's going to have the sickest gaming setup ever now. Blake Snell, who is constantly online. One more point here, and then we'll take a break and come back and chat about this from a Dodgers perspective. How good is Blake Snell, right? When we talk about the best pitchers in baseball, where does he rank? So on our free agent list, Snell is sixth. Jordan and I disagreed on this. I am the high guy now on Blake Snell because I think the ceiling is outrageous, and what he can offer you when starts matter the most is unique and is a true separator for him. I would probably take Corbin Burns over him. I think I would probably take Roky Sasaki over him. Just moving forward. I'm saying moving forward.
Okay.
Because of the potential and the age and the years and the timing. If I needed one start tomorrow, game 7 of the World Series, how many pitchers in baseball would you take over Blake Snell? Like, full stop, right? Like, I'm not even asking you to think twice about it. For me, Zach Wheeler, Tarek Skubal, probably Corbin Burns, considering what he showed me in that wild card start. Gerrit Cole is right there. He would have been there before this postseason. And there were moments where it was a little bit rocky. He's still right up there. But in terms of I'm not even thinking about it, for me, it's Wheeler, Skubal, Burns. And probably by this time next year, Paul Skenes. Let's be real.
If I was going to just put the number on it, I'd say four. But because I know if you're talking about one game, Blake can wake up after playing the game all night and strike out 16. Right? Like, I think when Blake is on, he might be the most dominant pitcher in all of Major League Baseball. Right? The stuff, you talk about nasty electric stuff, and he does it with ease. Like, there's not a lot of effort in his mechanics or anything like that, which is like, wow. I remember that night where in six innings, he struck out 15, and it's like, well, how is this human? Like, how does he do stuff like this? I would agree with you. Like, if you're going to say Wheeler is one of the best big game pitchers we have, maybe the best big game pitcher we have in the big leagues, I'd put Cole up there, because even with the blow up in the postseason, what he was able to do in that game against the Dodgers, where he just stayed out there, not a lot of guys that would have done that.
Yeah.
And he's been in that moment a lot. And I think Skubal has put himself in that conversation as well. But I'm going with Blake off of the strikeout ability alone.
And that's the thing. Since 2021, he has the third best strikeout rate behind Tyler Glasnow, who he's now on the same team as again, and Spencer Strider. He is the second lowest batting average against since 2021. So that's limiting contact, hard contact, and a lot of it. And that's behind only Spencer Strider. He's also a walk monster. So he has the second highest walk rate in that span since 2021, behind only Michael Kopech, who is now also on his team in the bullpen. And so it's just he's a very unique watch. He's very infuriating at times, but in terms of blowing the ball past guys, not a lot of people can do this. Let's do the Scobo now. All winter long, we are keeping track of the wins, the losses, and the draws for one Mr. Scott Boris, agent to the Stars, and Garrett Stubbs. Is this a win, a loss, or a draw on the Scobo?
I think this is a big win on the Scobo. For one, I think I wrote down the comps for Blake Snell's deal. Obviously, Nola, 7 for 172, DeGrom, 5 for 185, and Carlos Rodon, 6 for 162. I look at this for Scott Boris and Blake as one vindication again, because that was as public as possible. You're talking about one of your biggest clients not signing until March 19th for a team that we didn't really expect him to sign with, where it seems like you punted might not be the right word. Like you had to do that, right? You had to go find him a team. He could not pitch last season, right? So you found him a team that was going to pay him a nice chunk of change for the one season, knowing that you were going to opt out. And I think for the most famous agent in all of Major League Baseball to have an offseason like that, and for Blake to come out, pitch the way he did, and for Scott to have to go back to the table and say, hey, this same guy that y'all didn't want last year is the best pitcher in Major League Baseball, right? And to get a very respectable number. Imagine you've already talked to people around the game, but like, that's a really good deal for Blake and Scott Boris.
Yeah. Remember, Snell stood by Boris.
Yes.
So when there was the criticism about Jordan Montgomery, who had a similar situation, signed that deal with the Diamondbacks, Montgomery then left Boris and said that Boris butchered his free agent negotiations. Snell showed up and was like, no, this is from The Athletic. Quote, my experience with Scott has been great. He told me everything that was happening, all the offers I got. For him to just get bashed for what I believe is false, that's not fair. I really strongly believe that. Described Boris as an honorable man. And so Boris repaying Snell's faith here, this is an enormous W on the Scobo. Now, as is the rule, it's just one win. Okay, winning 7-0 away at Chelsea counts for 3 points, all the same. And this moves Scobo to 6-5-2.
Here's my question, and I don't know if you and Jordan have talked about this in this fashion before, is I feel like the Blake Snell win is a lot bigger than, like, let's say the Pete Alonso win, right? After, because of everything we talked about with what happened last year, where if you're Scott, you feel you have the proverbial egg on your face, where people are laughing, like, you didn't get your client the deal he wanted. You had Jordan Montgomery leave. And there were a lot of discussion out there about, yo, Blake should leave. Like, Blake should sign with CAA or Excel or Octagon, or anybody would be glad to have Blake Snell on their roster of clients. And he stayed. Like, this seems like a much bigger win than other Scott clients.
Sure. Absolutely. But a win is a win is a win. This is like the Dodgers beating the Padres in the NLDS. It's like, from a narrative perspective, it's everything.
Yeah.
But it is just one win on our stupid little game. Russ, let's take a break. And when we get back, we'll talk about what deferred money is, what this signing means for the Dodgers, and what it means for Major League Baseball. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, pinch hitter Russell Dorsey. Will he be Willie Harris, or will he be Manuel Margot? Look up those numbers. It is time for one of my favorite segments. Explain this to me like I'm five.
Explain this to me like I'm five.
This contract, like many the Dodgers have handed out recently, contains something called deferred money. I, as a five-year-old, I don't know what that means. To me, money is just money. So can you explain to little adolescent Jake what deferred money is?
All right, buddy. Let's think of it this way. Let's say that I'm going to give you $100.
Oh, my God. Like,
$100 whole dollars? Yes, I'm going to give you $100 whole dollars. But I'm going to have to defer some of this. So you will get the whole $100.
What does that mean?
That means
defer. I don't know.
I won't give you the whole $100 today. You'll get all the $100. You just won't get it all today. I'll give you $60 today. And that'll be $60 whole dollars. They'll be in your hand that you can put in your pocket today. And then over time, you'll get the rest of the $40 that I owe you to have the collective, the whole $100.
Now, why would you do that? Why not give me all the money right now?
All right. So here's the thing. I want you to come play for my team. But I also want Hearts to come to play for my team too.
Oh.
But I don't have necessarily the pie of money.
Yeah.
If I give you all the money today, I can't bring Hearts in. And you want Hearts on our team too, right?
I do like our producer, Mr. Hearts. So by me getting more money later, I can hang out with my friends now.
Correct. If I give you $60 today and promising you the other $40 down the line, I can give the $40 that you don't get today, I can give that to Hearts, and then Hearts can come play for our team.
What happens when you have to pay me and all of my other friends the rest of that money down the road? Are you going to have enough money to do that?
So here's the benefit that we have on our team, for our specific team.
Our team.
Our team specifically, we have more money than everybody else.
Oh.
And we can do things differently, but we're playing by the same rules as everybody else. So other people are going to get mad at us thinking we're cheating and making, we're building super teams and we're doing something wrong. We're actually playing well within the rules. Other teams are just really bad at playing by the rules. And so I can pay you your $100 over time. I can pay Hearts whatever I'm paying Hearts. I could go get more of, I can bring Jordan on our team too. And let's say
Jordan asks
for $100 and maybe we should pay him more than the $100, but because he cares so much about having great players on our team, he's going to say, no, pay me $2 and I'll take the rest of the money down the line.
So like, one thing,
instead
Russ,
of your $40, he's saying I will take $98 down the
line. Yeah. You do need to pay Jordan and I the exact same amount though. That has just been consistent.
And if that's the case, we'll figure that out.
Thank
but
you,
I'm
Russ.
Saying for this example, let's say Jordan says, I want 100 or I deserve 100. Not I want, I deserve 100 because of who I am. I am Jordan Schusterman. And I say, okay, Jordan Schusterman, you are absolutely correct. And we know you're going to bring in a lot of money anyway.
Because Jordan's, Jordan's a sex symbol in Japan.
He is. And so he's like, for the good of this team, I understand that outside of our team, I can go make a lot of money anyway.
I think I get this now. I think I understand baseball. Wow. Thanks, Russ.
No problem.
Okay. Here's the deal. The deferred money is wonky. The Dodgers did not invent this. Okay. The Nats kind of did, or they are the real proprietors of this in recent time. Like they gave a lot, like Scherzer's contract was crazy deferred. Right. And it's an obvious strategy. Like, it's not that complicated, right? Hold back some money now, pay it later, and you can build a better team. Is it within the rules? Yes. Why don't other teams do it? I don't know, because they don't have the same amount of money. Well, guess what? A lot of them have enough to do this. They do. They straight up do. And I want to transition now to this overarching question about the Blake Snell contract and the Dodgers that kind of came up last night. Is this good or bad for baseball? A sentiment I saw on the internet box is that the Dodgers flexing their financial might is widening the gap between the rich and the poor teams and creating an uneven playing field within the league. Now, yes, do the Dodgers have more financial strength than every other team? Absolutely, they do. I've said this many times. It's not like that money is going to go to charity, okay? The Dodgers are spending this money because they are making this money, okay? This money exists. They just paid a lot of money for a really, really good team that put a lot of butts in seats and a lot of advertising dollars in their pocket. They're then using that money that they got from winning the freaking World Series to continue the thing going. And so while I understand, I really do, like if you're a fan of a team that's a small market team and you see the Dodgers doing this and you're the Brewers, right? You're a Brewers fan. And you know the Brewers are going to have to trade Devin Williams because they don't want to pay him $10 million. And you're like, how is this fair? I get that. I totally understand the frustration. But that frustration, in my opinion, shouldn't go to the Dodgers or to the league. It should go to your own ownership group for how they're operating.
1,000%. And I feel that the Dodgers have taken the crown from the Houston Astros of being the villain of baseball has been planted on Andrew Friedman's head as being a villain. And you said everything right there. Like, they're going to get all this anger and vitriol from fans of the the Athletics of ? The Milwaukee Brewers, the Miami Marlins, like all these small market teams, the Chicago White Sox, where you feel like, oh, we will never have an opportunity to do that. And the reality is, like, well, you would if the person that owns your franchise, your ownership group, said, you know what, we're actually going to invest in this team and not just look at it as some cash cow that I can cash out on in 20 years when I'm about to pass away and then give all that money to my kids. Like, I think there is.
Because look, time out. It's not fair. It's not fair. If you're a team of a small, if you're a fan of a small market team and you see the Dodgers operating like a behemoth in a way that is going to benefit them, like this is the simple part. Adding Blake Snell and having all these starting pitchers allows you to weather the inevitable attrition that comes from starting pitcher injuries, and they have a comically good rotation. Duh. Obvious. Great. Right. And if you're a fan of a team that can't do that, it doesn't feel fair. It is an uneven dynamic. But that's not the Dodgers' fault, right? They're going to operate within the rules of the game, and that's their right and their prerogative, and they should be doing that. They'd be idiots if they weren't acting this way. And so to pretend like the Dodgers are flouting the rules doesn't make sense to me.
That's the part I have a problem with, too, because it's like, well, no, like they're all 30 teams, I'll take it back to last offseason. Shohei signs for $700 million over 10 years, defers $680 of that. The same deal was offered to every team that he met with. Same deal, right? Like, it's not like he offered the Dodgers that deal and told the Milwaukee Brewers, nah, I need all $700 today, right? It's not like that. Teams just chose to say, I'm good. And that's why teams should be upset with their ownership group.
Yeah.
Because they're choosing not to play by the same rules that the Dodgers play by. Like, the Dodgers have just learned, like, oh, we do this here, move this money there. You, in these conversations with free agents, is like, hey, Shohei's deferring all his money. Come on now. You're not going to defer $30 million? Yep. Come on, defer $30 million. And then guys are like, oh, hell yeah. If we're going to get Mookie, we're going to have Freddie, and we're going to Shohei and Teo for a year, like, we'll do that.
I want to play for the Dodgers, too, because – you know, Kevin Durant got a lot of hate for going to the Warriors, right? But this is different. Baseball's different. Blake Snell can't join the Rockies and take them to the playoffs.
Right.
He just tried that in San Francisco, basically, and it didn't work. And so hating on individual players for the super team dynamic in baseball rings a little more hollow to me than it does in basketball, where one single player can have a much larger impact right on wins and losses. Other point. The money that the Dodgers are pouring into the sport is a good thing for the sport. Agents will tell you this, and the MLBPA will tell you this as well. Because it's going to force other teams to spend to catch up. The Mets are the obvious one. Steve Cohen is a top 100 rich boy on planet Earth, and he's going to have to punch back. And once he punches back, John Middleton, the owner of the Phillies, who was embarrassed in this postseason and has invested heavily in the team, to help the team make a ton of money, the Phillies sold out like every game last year. He's going to then have to respond to Steve Cohen. And then what do the Braves do? And then the Nats, they want to contend. They've got an $89 million payroll right now. That's got to go higher, right? And so the rising tide, what is it? Rising tide brings up all boats. Raises all boats. That's what we got here. Again, though, I'm sympathetic to the frustrated fans. I get it. But just point the frustration at the right people. That's all I got to say. Now, do we want the Dodgers to win the next 10 World Series, Russ? No. That's not good for the sport either. But let's also not pretend like this hasn't happened before. The Yankees in the 90s. Last team to go back-to-back, 99-2000. They were richer than everyone else. They used that to their advantage. The Yankees in the 50s and the 60s. They were basically using the Kansas City A's as a freaking their own farm team. Okay? This has happened in baseball history before. I don't think it's going to happen like that again just because of how random the sport is and the added postseason rounds and all that stuff. And I think that the Dodgers becoming this imposing behemoth is a really interesting narrative. Baseball needs a villain for everyone to hate. For a long time, it was the Yankees. Then it was the Red Sox for a little bit. Then it was the Astros. Now it's the Dodgers. That's fine with me.
I love the villain dynamic. I think that's great for any sport. I'm with you. Like, baseball is so random. We haven't had a back-to-back champ since that Yankees team that you talk about. So this idea that, they're going to win the next 5 World Series and it's not going to be that's just not how baseball works, right? Baseball is so random. The Dodgers signed the best player maybe to ever play the game last year. And I know they beat the Yankees in 5 games, but they had 2 starting pitchers for the last week of the regular season and most of the postseason until Walker Buehler refound his old form and turned into a stud the last couple of starts that he made. But like, that's not one ball bounces a different way. The Dodgers could be out, right? The Dodgers could have gotten knocked out by the Padres, and we're not even having this conversation.
Yeah.
So because of randomness, because of baseball weird, because of baseball, period, end sentence, I just don't think this is something that people should be as angry about as they are.
Right? Yeah, like, but no, I get the anger. I do. But the anger is in a way like pre-coping. Right? It's anticipating that the Dodgers are going to roll into your favorite team's stadium and kick your favorite team's butt. Like, don't like it, play better. Skill issue. I don't know what to tell you. And I guarantee you that every GM and manager of all the other teams this morning are not like, the Dodgers got Blake Snell, let's pack it up for the next 4 years. Like, no, that's not how sports works. And while I understand the frustration from the fan bases, I'll say it time and time again, let the season play out. Better teams than this, better Dodger teams than this, have gotten knocked out early on in the postseason, and the 2025 Dodgers could do the same thing. But at the same time, I'm not going to pretend like adding Blake Snell to this already ridiculous rotation isn't going to help. Here's who they have now. Snell, 2-time Cy Young. Yamamoto. Yoshinobu Yamamoto just got the largest contract for a starting pitcher, $325 million last offseason. Shohei Ohtani, who won the MVP. Yeah, he also pitches. Easy to forget how good he is at pitching, just to say. Career 301 ERA. With 608 strikeouts in 481 and 2/3 innings. Pretty good. And then Tyler Glasnow, who was an all-star and would have started game one this year if he hadn't gotten hurt. And then below that, Clayton Kershaw, who's probably going to re-sign, Hall of Famer. Tony Gonsolin, who was hurt for all of this year, who had the second lowest ERA in baseball behind only Jacob deGrom from 2020 to 2022. Bobby Miller, who was in the rotation to start this year, struggled. But if he bounced back and was effective, I would not be surprised. Dustin May, who was out all last year. but had a 2.63 ERA in his first nine starts before he got hurt in 2023. And then Ben Kasparius, who started game four of the World Series. I know he was working in short bursts out of the pen, but this was a real starting pitching prospect for a reason. The Dodgers have just an embarrassment of riches that is undeniably going to help them. All right, let's take a short break, and we will be right back on Baseball Barbershop. Last question, Russ, and then we'll get on out of here. How does the Blake Snell signing going to the Dodgers impact the rest of the free agent market moving forward? So, like, missed out? Like, who wanted Snell, who didn't?
I would say the Red Sox are the team that is probably affected the most. Maybe Atlanta, right? If they think that, all right, Fried's going to sign somewhere else, we need somebody to fill that ace void for us.
But I don't think they were ever going to play at that level. Like, I don't think the Braves, they're trying to get under the luxury tax. And I don't think the starter that they end up adding is going to be in the $182 million.
I just mean in terms of, like, you need somebody to fill. Who's going to be the ace of the Braves staff?
Chris Sale. You just won the Cy Young.
But you need more than one.
Yeah, Spencer Strider's coming back. Spencer Schwellenbach was amazing. Like, I think that
how many innings is Spencer Strider even going to pitch? Like, it's the Shohei argument, yeah, right?
Of course.
He pitches 120 innings.
Of course. I think if they add Walker Buehler, I like that rotation. I don't think they need to play at the top, if that makes sense. I think the Red Sox 100% have to play at the top. And I think that this is great news for Max Fried. Max Fried is a left-handed pitcher, younger than Blake Snell, better at run prevention, not as dominant in terms of missing bats. Do you think Fried goes above this or below this?
How old is Max Fried?
29? I believe Max Fried is 30. Yes.
All right. So Blake signed this at 32.
So Max Fried will be pitching in his age 31 season next year. Blake Snell will be pitching in his age 32 season next year. So he's just 1 year younger.
If Fried signed for 185,
but it would be another year. Like, it would be a similar total dollar value, I think.
So 6 for 190.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I think he wins from this. I think the Red Sox are going to have to pivot. I'm interested in which way they pivot. Like, I think for the Red Sox, and I've talked about the Red Sox a lot recently, they have a lot of things that they could do to have a big offseason, right? Like, I know Soto is the thing on the shelf for everybody. But if you sign now Max Fried and you go get Tanner Scott, right? And then Teoscar, hey, that's a nice offseason for you. Or let's say they have the prospects to do it. Go get Garrett Crochet from the Chicago White Sox. And then maybe you have enough prospect capital to trade for a Devin Williams or something like that. Like, there are moves for the Red Sox to make where missing out on Snell isn't the end of the world.
But absolutely.
You can't strike out again where your fan base that's already like, they're never going to, like, I've had Red Sox fans in my comments always like, they're not going to do anything and our ownership group doesn't spend. Well, they're the fans. They're actually a big market that have the fans that you're talking about.
But the fans are right, dude. Like,
I get it.
Last winter, that ownership group said they were going to go full throttle and then they just kind of went to sleep. And so the Red Sox leadership talking a big game again rings hollow until they do something. I said this in the last episode. You know the Teddy Roosevelt saying? Speak softly, carry a big stick. The Red Sox are hollering into that night and carrying a very small carrot. Okay? Because until they do, I will not believe them. I just will not believe them. Now, I do think that they will probably end up spending some money this winter. They kind of have to. But they should just shut up until they do it, is kind of where I'm at. Another team, huge loser, the San Francisco Giants. For a variety of reasons. Blake Snell played for you last year. Now he plays for your biggest rival. You are downsizing, having just let go of an executive that you took from the Los Angeles Dodgers, Farhan Zaidi. You have brought in Buster Posey to infuse grit and a winning attitude and a mentality into your franchise. But boy, they are playing eighth fiddle to the Dodgers. The imbalance here is striking.
The same issues that the Giants had where when Farhan was president of baseball ops, they're still having, where how do you lure a big-time, top-of-market free agent to San Francisco?
You pay him a lot.
They're now in a position like a small market team where they're going to have to overpay to get somebody to come play for the Giants. And I feel like their pendulum has swung from they went super analytical, super new age baseball when they brought in Farhan. And I feel like bringing Buster in as president of baseball ops and some of the people that he's brought in, whether it's Jeff Berry is agent at CAA for a long time and bringing back Bobby Evans, like it feels like there's the pendulum swinging back to now we need to give it back to old school baseball.
But it's just not an attractive place to be. Now, okay, so let's be real. Baseball dudes don't want to play in San Francisco. They don't. Right. We could talk about the reasons why downtown San Francisco has changed since the pandemic. Mm-hmm. That is like 0.5% of the reason, and it dominates kind of a larger chunk of the pie. But players believe it. They do. And so it matters in terms of the team's ability to get people there. It's not attractive, whether it's, or it's not as attractive as the Dodgers, right? And the juxtaposition there is crazy because you want to go play for the Dodgers, best development staff at the big league level, beautiful place to live, right? Team that's consistently good. The Giants can't compete with any of those things right now. And so they need to find a way to make players want to go there. And I'll just quickly shout out, this is kind of an odd reason to do the, like the Seattle Mariners, guys don't necessarily want to sign there because of how far away it is and the travel and whatever. The Mariners have done everything that they possibly can on the pitching side to make that an attractive place for pitchers to go sign. Same thing with like Cleveland or Tampa. If you sign with them, you know that you're going to go there and get better and learn some new things and it's going to help your career moving forward. The Giants need to kind of brand themselves along that lines because they're certainly not bringing anybody in with any of the other stuff they have going on.
See, I think they are in that vein. Like, I think you can go there as a starting pitcher and you see the guys they've had over the last couple of years, the veteran starters that go there and then they have a sub four, you know, a 3.5 ERA. I think they, when it comes to starting pitching, I'm not worried about the Giants, but I am worried about the Giants when it comes to like, who is going to drive in runs, who's going to get on base, who's going to hit the ball at the ballpark for your franchise, because we've been having now the same conversation for years. Like, it's a problem that the last 30 homer hitter you've had was Barry Bonds. That's a big problem. We're about to go into year of our Lord 2025. That can't keep happening. And so, you miss out on Judge, where you did try to overpay, still said no. I don't know what it takes for them. And maybe Buster, because he's a player, a former player that this generation of players knows as, oh, that was a dude. Maybe that helps you in the conversation where it didn't with Farhan, right? Where Farhan was maybe perceived as you're an analyst, you're a numbers guy, and you're very names on a spreadsheet, where Buster's going to get, hey, man, this is how you win. And when we won the World Series and get into, like, players buy into that stuff.
Yeah.
So maybe that helps them. But similar to your argument for the Red Sox, I can't believe it until I see it from the Giants. Right. You could talk all you want about, hey, we want to go back to the glory years when winning was priority here in San Francisco. I get it. And it's a franchise with a lot of history when it comes to winning. But I just don't know what their plan is to get that back.
I'm tapped, Russ. Let's go eat some turkey. Thank you for coming on and doing this surprise podcast with me. Thank you to Blake Snell for filling my morning. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. Thank you to Jordan Schusterman for prioritizing his piece. For when I asked last night, hey, can you do a show tomorrow? He said, no, I'm off. I love that. It's important, man. Thank you, Russ, for filling in. Anything you'd like to share before we get on out of here?
Don't get angry at a team, guys. Let's redirect your anger. But like Jake said,
anger's good,
I understand.
Dude. Anger kind of slaps.
I appreciate that people care about
baseball. I'm just saying as a feeling, anger can be useful. But let's direct it properly.
Yes. Direct the anger properly. But hey, I think this is great for people like us who this is our job to talk and write about these things. I think this is great for fans as a lead up to the winter meetings in about 10 days.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to have a lot of action over the next 2 weeks. I think for the first time in a while, I do think the winter meetings are going to be lively. Like I wouldn't be shocked if Juan Soto signs at the winter meetings in Dallas and it's this big time spectacle. So buckle up, kids. It's going to be a fun one.
I have a feeling we're going to be spending a lot more time at Dodger Stadium in October over the next decade. Russ, thank you. Everyone have a lovely Thanksgiving. I need to go cook.